have to keep this start. It's the 51st meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee. Today is February the 16th. The time is 3:03. This is a meeting that originally was scheduled for yesterday afternoon. Due to floor session, we were not able to meet on time. On today's calendar, or the carried over calendar, we have a continuation on House Bill 357. That is an act relating to grants for local service roads and trails. And we have a first reading House Bill 439 and House Bill 419. Commissioner Hoffman has requested, because of conflict of his staff, to make a presentation on House Bill 419. He's scheduled to appear around 3:15, so we take that up when he comes. And so we might as well go in the sequence we have it set up here. We start with House Bill 357. That's that local service roads and trails bill. And the last time we left off, at the request of Representative Herman, she had some questions and reservations on the bill. And I have had, in the meantime, staff check out the source of the concerns. If I recall right, it was the question if first-class cities were exempt from allocation under the bill the way it was. And I turn it over to the staff here, David.
It was reported that the first-class cities did not have that kind of funding, and that the program originally was for rural communities in Alaska, and that was basically the information we got from the Department of Transportation, who got the money, that sort of thing.
So the answer to the question is that first-class cities. Pardon me?
I'm listening.
Oh, I should probably, for the record, state that the whole committee is present. And the answer to the question is that first-class cities and home rule cities within the borough are not eligible for LSR&T funding the way the act is written now and has been amended a few years ago. So a change in the allocation from 50% to 70%, which would benefit rural area, doesn't address that issue one way or another. So I open the thing up, the fill up for discussion at that point. Representative Cato.
Well, Ed asked me a question. Did you ask the same question, Ed?
I'm real confused here on the whole thing at this point.
I couldn't find out the answer. Why were first-class cities dropped out?
Well, I think I explained that the last time. Far back in the, just about a little after Statehood Act, in the early 60s, the act was created to help rural areas with small-type local projects and establish a program for that. And the cities that had a tax base and had public works powers already took care of that type of thing. So the bill was geared towards rural areas that didn't have a tax base. Then, historically, at that time, the borough creations came into the picture. And more boroughs got created. And the whole intent of the whole program got more and more sidetracked. If you recall right, I gave a short historic overview that first, localities provided gravel and free right-of-ways and things like that. They also absorbed maintenance, and basically the role was to provide training and assistance to small communities with small-type projects. Well, after the boroughs got in, pretty soon DOT became not an administering agency anymore. They became a grant-handling agency. They just become a pass-through administrating agency, and all of a sudden, most of the money went to boroughs, and it was not even used anymore the way it originally was. The program was intended for it. It became another source for capital projects, and was just another funding source. And it wasn't uniformly that way, but in general terms, that is true. That the last few years I looked at what municipalities and boroughs were doing, and they were just buttering it right into larger scale projects and some smaller scale projects. There's no question that the whole LSR&T Act as such needs to be rewritten or looked at, either completely done away with. And the legislature has problem with the identity of the program because we haven't funded it for 2 years. We just don't know anymore if it's a valid program or not. Well, I have no problem just putting the whole thing on hold and just say, hey, we use the interims this year. And as a matter of fact, Representative Cato, in her capacity as chairman of the Transportation Committee, has already appointed a subcommittee to rewrite the act in the interim this summer. I would say let's leave it at that point. But the governor has put in $2 million in his jobs bill, in the $10 million which he put in under his discretion. And I think at this time it would be very controversial and time-consuming and probably would not meet the deadlines to rewrite the act in relationship to the $2 million. But DOT recognizes also that the act is archaic and needs to be readdressed, and as a consequence, they have put that little, I won't call it a phony change, but it's a change in basically to keep the subject matter alive, and here we are. And I don't have any real strong feelings on it one way or another, except that I think, just like the transmittal letter from Governor Cooper says, I think it leads back to the original intent of the whole program, and that was that it was an urban-oriented program. And in the good old days, we had, you know, figures like $4, $5, $6 million in it, even in the 60s, and $10 million, yeah. So, you know, you can see how through history, less and less was appropriated for it. And of course, one of the reasons was that the urban areas addressed their capital program concerns in their own capital CIP programs. And in the case of the two metropolitan area in Fairbanks and Anchorage, they have a very formal, and I think Juneau also, they have a very formal AMATS and FMATS process, which involves the municipality and DOT directly in identifying their needs. So the boroughs, you can't criticize the boroughs uniformly. Some boroughs have used an appreciable part of their funding and put it in the more rural areas of the borough. Some of them, they just took it as another funding source and said, hey, we put it into our regular program. So,
Mr. Chairman, I might want to say one thing. I remember early before this bill was changed, just kind of a concept that rural villages would ask the governor if they'd put in like $10,000 or $15,000 to cut a road to a bank where they were hauling fish off the beach if they didn't have one. And I think that kind of idea generated this kind of a bill and a law. And it was sort of a patchwork deal.
That's exactly right. It was a program that reacted to very local needs where there wasn't an engineering department, there was no administrative help, there was no equipment, and there were definite local needs. So what, you know, we have several alternatives here. I think if we want to monkey around with the bill altogether, then let's just forget it, because that is a very complex, big thing, and we just let it die. Just say, hey, we're going to continue with the 50% funding source for that $2 million and be done with it, and try to address the whole thing in the interim. If we want to just pass it out and let the floor decide then if that is a good approach for that one-time deal or not, that's fine with me too. I just can restate what the program was supposed to be doing, and you know, that is in a way a step trying to bring that program back into that direction. Representative Sabaki.
Yeah, I probably just repeat a couple of things that I have concerned last time we had the bill in front of us. And again, if we kind of exclude and throw Anchorage out of this conversation, it always seems to be Anchorage is thrown in there. But I think there's probably as many boroughs that have as much rural needs in regards to this road. And you have a good point about if the monies haven't been properly used as they should have been, that's not an internal problem, it's a state problem, I'm not addressing it. We can also relate that, you know, we probably have some areas in the rural areas where we've had the same problem also. All I'm saying is I think there's as much a need in a lot of those boroughs in regards to their rural areas that still need a portion of these monies out there. And I have a problem with the 70-30, and I will continue to object to the 70-30 at this time.
Any other comments? Representative Herman?
Oh, good.
Representative Cato?
The way it's on the books right now is 50-50.
Right.
And so if we didn't do anything about this bill, then the $2 million would just go into a 50-50 situation.
That's right.
Still be used.
And then we could still have the interim committee look into rewriting the LSNRT. Because that's one program that has done a great deal in my district, and I'd hate to see us lose it altogether. But I agree with Henry completely that it needs to be rewritten.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, either way, you know, in one way we don't have to do anything. If we want to stick with the way it is right now, we just do nothing. And if we think that we should address it right now till the bill is rewritten, then we pass it. We can pass it and say we don't like it, or we can let it go on the floor, or we can let it die in committee. So.
Well,
Representative Herman.
No, I think just in response to what Betty was saying, you know, I would prefer to let the way it is presently set up right now, I would prefer to have it done that way and then do interim work. And if we haven't had work done in transportation, we can address it in community and regional affairs in the interim also. And then come back with a specific proposal, either elimination or coming back with a mechanism that's a lot tighter. I wouldn't say fairer, but it'd probably be a lot tighter than what it obviously is at this time.
It's what?
We could have them define fair and equitable.
That keeps a couple million lawyers busy.
There goes the money.
There goes the money.
I think Representative Cato's suggestion is a good one, although I have some questions for the department, just so I can get clarification.
Sure, sure. Who from the department, Keith or Bruce? Keith, would you just identify yourself for the record, please?
Sure. My name is Keith Gerken, Deputy Commissioner for Transportation and Public Facilities.
That's why I couldn't get you on the phone.
Some of my questions are, you know, I know that sitting on Transportation Committee a few years ago, we took out first-class cities out of the allocation for LSRT. And I guess that was first-class cities within a borough. Just correct me if I'm wrong here. And then what I have is that, the organized, in the boroughs, the organized boroughs, borough governments get an allocation, home rule cities get an allocation, first-class cities get no allocation, although you're not saying that first-class cities cannot be a part of the program, that they can just put in a request and get into the program. And then I guess maybe if you could give me some history on the whole LSRT program as far as how the allocation worked before, because I know that the city of Dillingham had to wait. They were in the program, but they got so much each year, and then by 1990 or whatever, that they had enough to fund a project. And then, you know, some of Representative Springer's concerns, is Anchorage getting this money and putting it in with, the legislators' capital improvements projects and putting it in with the, however they use it, I guess that's their business, but, maybe you can just explain some of the background.
Sure, I'm probably not the best historian, not having been around the department that long, at least dealing with this program, but you are correct, and the first point is that the law, as I read it, doesn't say first-class cities don't participate. It simply says that they do not get a formula allocation. And apparently, it used to be that they did, and that because of the way the formula works, their allocation was a very small amount of money. And that they, in fact, I think, decided that they would do better competing out of the unorganized allocation to get an entire project funded rather than sort of banking these small amounts every year that came to them in the formula. Some cities did that under the program where if they didn't have enough money in their formula to do a particular project, it simply went into an account and they accumulated it 2 or 3 years until they got a sufficient amount of money to perform some worthwhile planable project. That, I'm not sure exactly how that was kept, but it's apparently kept accounts, literally, of the money that was accumulated in the communities. As to the question of exactly how the larger municipalities and boroughs dealt with their money, in all of the funds, the department did get a 5-year plan of how the money was to be spent. I don't think, as far as I know, that people were simply taking it and lumping it into giant projects. I think that the money was dedicated to projects which we were made aware of and which we had some level of concurrence in. The degree to which we probably had a say in those projects is I can't really speak to. Bruce Freitag probably has more of a history in that and may be able to add something to that. In terms of the whole question of whether the bill needs a major overhaul, the chairman's correct. I don't think we'd argue with that. I think it needs to have a fresh look. We propose this change, and I think it's one that's worth making. In the change, basically, it provides a shift. Each $1 million in the program, it shifts about $100,000 from the organized areas to the unorganized areas. That's about the money extent that it really makes a difference. It's not taking the money away from the urban areas. It's simply changing the balance. And we feel that that in itself is balanced by the way which the federal highway program is allocated to urban areas. We think that they benefit more significantly from the federal programs and for their road projects. And so we don't really have a problem in seeing that the change in the 70-30 formula really one, because it's not a significant numerical change, but also because it balances that federal bias a bit. We think it's an adjustment worth making. It's not the only adjustment in the long run that needs to be made. Was that enough of an answer? Did you want to hear some more about it?
Well, maybe just to shed a little bit follow-up light on it. It is not only that some of those funds get buttered in with other big projects. The biggest change I have seen is that the boroughs, because they are geared that way and don't have the expertise which DOT had, are going and handling those funds just like any other contract. They go out to design, they go to full-scale plans, they go out to bid, they buy the gravel, they buy the right-of-way, and the contractor is going to do it. And what you do is you get a tenth of a mile of road for your dollar, where you used some old grader and you Shanghai the loader from the city and you put a couple guys on and trained them, and the corporation gave the gravel to you, you built 5 miles for the same money. So that's what I mean, is the bang for the buck has been lost. You know, too much goes into overhead and paperwork and that type of stuff.
I think I heartily agree with Henry. And I have seen some very good projects come out of this in small areas. Like, I think I used the Railroad Avenue in Cordova as an idea. And things like that, there's been trails marked and trails made. And that to me is what this program means. It doesn't mean put it into a large project somewhere. It means put it into a small project and get donations and stuff like that. Don't go through the process. And I think maybe in restructuring, that's one of the things we're going to have to set down as a criteria base. I don't really know. I mean, I have a hard time wanting to put this cast into concrete in statute, the 70-30 at the present time, because then we just have to change it. Mm-hmm. And again, we're going through another duplicative process that I'm not sure we need to do.
I think Representative Furman still.
Then the $2 million, that's proposed in the jobs bill, how will that be allocated, I guess, you know, because some areas don't get an allocation.
Well, you can go back to your exhibit, item 11, that gives you an example on the $6 million appropriation, how it gets distributed on top, okay? And you can just divide those figures by three, and you get what you would get under the 50-50, what you get under the 30-70. Have you all seen that sheet?
Yeah.
That's just an example, but if you pluck the percentages in, the percentages would stay. You see that the total difference, for example, would be that Anchorage would lose about 11%, and then the Interior would gain 3.9, Southeastern would lose 0.8, Western would gain 7.2, well, these would gain 1.0. You know, so that shows you the distribution of that type of deal, and you can take first-class cities wherever they may be out of that. So it's not a lot of money, but in real money terms, but nevertheless, that depends on the size of the program. You know, that the example used here is a $6 million, which was the average 10 years ago, and now our example would be $2 million for right now.
You wouldn't lose much with
me. No, it's in absolute money. Now, I got to bring a problem up to the committee. Apparently, with our change here, the rules committee people or whoever has also allocated that room here to another hearing?
Yes, at 3:30. We're trying one last touch up right now to see if they can get another room.
Oh, well, that's going to be the most interesting hearing we ever had. We're going to have that half off the table for them folks, this half here, and you sort the recording out. Who said what?
Where do I move my sign?
Well, we have an obvious problem now. With the problem with the recording equipment, I would say, well, we can move down in my office or something, but we don't have the recording stuff set up or any of that.
I have a small portable tape recorder I could use.
That would be extremely difficult on you.
Yeah, I think so too.
Try to transcribe from it.
Well, we only have a couple things. We can.
To check the cases. They checked the last one as well as what you're doing right now.
Okay, well, I continue until superior forces move in.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
We have an exhibit that I'm not sure we distributed to the committee where we broke it down by city and borough for a typical $1 million. That one, I think, is actually a greater detail. I can make that available if you like.
I think we have that here.
Okay. Yeah, that looks like it.
It's exhibit
both,
4?
Both the 50-50 and the 70-30 split.
Yeah. No, that's sick.
I think exhibit 4, huh?
Yeah.
And then there's also exhibit 6.
Yeah.
I personally feel that way. I think our committee is more concerned about the policy and the principle, the monetary part. I think it has a referral to finance. So, you know, if somebody has financial problems with it, that's a good place to hook in. But, of course, it has another referral to finance after us. I think we need to decide in principle if we want to accept that or not. Representative Collins.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have less concern with the change in the distribution of the pot than I do with the fact that you know, we have something that has a problem and needs to be changed, and I think Representative Cato is really correct that we really need to fix, I mean, that's what we really need to do is to fix that, and I guess I would be in support of not doing anything if it means that money will still be utilized to upgrade those trails and then use the interim to do what we really need to do, and that is to work on changing them.
Mm-hmm. And any more questions and comments?
I want to write a note to add before I make another.
Representative Collins.
Well, we can say that for this time and this distribution, they can do the, you know, the new formula, but you know, let's work on the real problem, especially if we have to change the LSR&T Act.
You mean attach a committee letter of intent to it?
Yeah. I mean, again, the distribution isn't as much a problem to me as the fact that, you know, the Act has a problem, and we really need to address that and take care of it. And it would be a mistake to put anything in statute if we're going to change it anyway, you know, as a result of what's done on the interim. So it would, you know, maybe for this time we'll say we'll do, you know, spend the $1 million, $2 million, whoever you like, but keep in mind this really needs to have to, you know, have to be done.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, for real money, for actual dollars, there's a lot involved. What I hate to see again is what we have experienced the last 2 years. We didn't have money to do some real basic things like trails, winter trail staking and stuff like that. I mean, those are some very basic human services. And I hate to see that again. I certainly wouldn't get in a political squabble or any squabble jeopardizing that the money gets sidetracked again. And so I feel pretty much the same way.
Go ahead. I got a couple ideas bubbling, but I'm not sure where they're bubbling.
Well, they bubble, maybe Representative Savarkar.
Yeah.
Let me burst, right? No,
first
you know, we're saying we're talking about little amounts of money, and it's not going to make that much difference, and sure, maybe nickel and dime. But the problem in nickel and dime in the urban areas is a nickel taken here, a dime taken there. We've got reductions in municipal systems, reductions in revenue share, reductions in a lot of other, well, over the last few years we have, and this may be very minor, but you're still going to wind up taking X amount of dollars from those areas. Now, it says District 1 Anchorage, but District 1 happens to take an Anchorage of the Kenai Peninsula, the Manson Borough. And so you're nickel and dime all those areas, and they've all taken cuts. And to take a few more dollars here and a few more dollars there, I just can't accept
it. Yeah, and I would know.
You know, and again, I would prefer to leave the program as is and address the entire program during the interim.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. The only thing is, I think where I have some take some issue with it is that the boroughs and so on, like I have said before, have a distinct advantage from the standpoint of being involved in the political process by getting their regular CIP recognized, where the small towns and villages are still in the same shape they were at statehood. They still got. They still sit there. And I think that is manifested simply by the fact when you take a look what has been appropriated to it. In the beginning, they were $10 million, $12 million, and it got less and less each year, which just shows nobody took care of it. You know? So, I'm open. I have some feelings on it, obviously, but I'm pretty much open to the committee what they want to do. I think if there's a strong commitment to rewrite the Act in the interim and get it through, I think that's what everybody agrees needs to be done. I think there's possibly another solution to it, and that is to come up with a line item program for the $2 million which the governor has in his jobs bill and work together with finance just like we did in the jobs bill and just say we're not going to fund LSR&D and just plug it right into the jobs bill as a line item program. You know, there are several ways to milk a cow.
Is there any, I was thinking on the same lines you are, Representative Springer, but is there any way that we can plug that $2 million in a line item and still maintain the identity that is LSR&D?
No, I don't think you can.
Money.
I don't think you can either.
No, that's what's bothering me.
What I'm saying is you just give the child another name. We just don't appropriate $2 million to LSR&D. We appropriate zero to LSR&D again and then take those $2 million and make a direct works program out of it with line item identification.
Well.
But then we get into the old battle again, you know, about who's going to get what.
Yeah, and I don't know whether you guys recognize it or not, but as far as I'm concerned, the House has been taking the shorts as far as the jobs bill is concerned.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I'd hate to give the Senate $2 million more to play with.
I agree. You know, So
I'm almost in favor of the 70-30 in order to keep that from happening. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. Every time there's a jobs bill, the House takes it in the shorts.
Now, I have to admit, my two senators are wonderful. I got everything I wanted. But that doesn't happen to everybody. Huh?
You have two senators?
Yeah. But they had three districts.
What's the pleasure of the committee on that?
I think I remember those two. They seem to be in my area, too.
Yeah.
Representative Herman.
Yeah, if it works out where you can get people to agree, you know, to not go by LSR and T for the $2 million, you know, I think that would be great. I don't know how we could work it out. But I guess another question to the department is, I don't think I really got my question answered about how this $2 million would work out if it was LSR and T. You know, would the allocation part, you know, where is it? Rural governments get allocation, home rule cities get an allocation. You know, first class cities get no allocation. Would these areas get an allocation and then the rest of the people just apply?
Yeah, did you get a copy? I think there was a handout, a little flow chart about how that
right here.
I still, why don't you explain it to me in English?
Sure.
Not by a flow chart.
Yeah, the $2 million, basically you go through the calculation of area and population, whether it's 50-50 or 70-30, and that determines based on the area and populations of each of the five districts how many of the dollars of the $2 million each of those five get. Then within that, you basically go through the same calculation within each district for the boroughs, the organized areas. Same thing, area and population as a percentage of that district, and they get that percentage of the district allocation.
Nobody wants to do that.
And then what doesn't go to the organized areas, based upon that, is basically available on a request grant basis through the department to whoever within the unorganized areas submits a proposal or a plan about how to spend that money.
Is there going to be any left by the time it gets to the unorganized areas?
Well, yeah, because the organized areas are not, they can only get their percentage basis based on population and area. So if you look at end of the 50-50 plan, there's out of $2 million, there's about out of each $1 million, about $400,000 statewide. So $800,000 of $2 million goes to unorganized areas under the 50-50 current formula of law.
800,000
out of $2 million, approximately.
Goes to the unorganized areas.
That's correct.
Okay.
If you take those percentages I pointed out, you're going to be real close. Mm-hmm. And then within those districts, which individual projects get funded? That's what DOT works out in. You know, within those five districts, right here. So the only thing that's set by legislative action is the distribution within the boroughs and unorganized areas within those districts. Then after that, it becomes discretionary in the case of the unorganized areas to DOT what they're going to do. In the case of the organized areas, it becomes the borough program in conjunction with DOT that gets it. Now, I want to know exactly what's going on with that committee room here. That's ridiculous. We got a lot of people here that want to testify on the other meeting, and I don't want to hold them up. If we just take top a second, Keith, we just go off the record for a couple minutes till they
I
can
need
drop
to ask Keith questions. Doesn't need to be on the record. Keith, which
tomorrow's
allocation district am I in anyway?
Public hearing on the teleconference on House Bill 1. And that's going to be just full.
That would give me an allocation district. I want
What allocation district?
Well, another big problem is that the old act is based on the old districts.
Okay.
You know? And now we
Where's
have three regions.
That is still doesn't tell me about that.
There's only five.
No,
where is
District 6?
That's one of the problems with these, the statewide designation. They don't conform to, the North Slope borough's cut in half.
Right.
Our regions have nothing to do with this, and we get into how to do it.
Because Cordova's in central region.
You're in 1 and 5. That's what I was thinking,
1 and 5 is the only way I can
figure
it out.
Yeah, and
you lose money.
Not that one.
Oh, no.
I pick it up.
We're kind of in the recess here waiting for a decision on the space and room. Okay, well, then we should make a... We should make an announcement to those folks and let them know what we're doing. Is there anybody in here that is here for the 3:30 meeting that's being held by admin? Okay, that lady there that just walked out, they have rescheduled that. Apparently, that committee is still the finance meeting. Crisis in government and how to control it. Okay, I guess we maintain our status here.
I didn't want to move.
And so what's are there any more questions as far as the technicality of the funding distribution or how that program works right now?
Yeah, see, that's just Cordova that's in central. The rest of my district is in 5.
For practical purposes, Betty, for practical purposes, DOT, like the North Slope Borough is a good example, that gets split in half by the administrative district boundaries of DOT. The way they do it, they figure out still how much the North Slope Borough gets, and then they say Fairbanks is going to administer the whole borough, even though the boundary may be half western and half interior.
Yeah.
They just do it that way, so they're not getting shortchanged because they're in two halves.
No, I realize that. I know I made a remark about, and I feel halfway that way, too, about the 50-50. Well, I have the same concern Henry has, Jim, and I'll tell you frankly, honestly, that I think urban areas do put it in their larger project just to fill a hole. And it isn't the LSR&T intent historically for that to happen, even though it's happened over the years. And the way I look at I always say LSR&T. I don't know why.
I say LSD.
LSD, yeah. Okay. Anyway, local roads and trails. The way I look at that is that it's a patchwork kind of thing for something that would not fit into a DOT project. Say the paving a very small strip in Whittier, for instance, that can be done by local administration and things like that, or a trail being marked out. I don't see it as putting it part of pavement on Spinard Road. Do you see what I'm saying?
Sure.
But that has been done. And I guess what I'm making a yell about is, yes, we need to rewrite the whole doggone program. And even if this one went through, it'd merely be retraced. I know I was worried about it being cast in concrete. That wouldn't happen if the whole bill was rewritten during the interim, even though this was in place. That's what I'm saying.
Representative Collins, you had?
Well, I guess my thought is that I'm kind of struck by the comment that you made, and Mr. Chairman, and maybe I misheard you, but your indication was the problem is that we've lost the bang for the buck, and you know, here we are, if we're going to be putting out $2 million, or are we only going to get $1 million worth of...
It doesn't address the problem one way or another.
Okay.
No. It doesn't mean because we get $100,000 more in a village, I think we get probably $100,000 more worth, more bang for the buck, but $1.9 million wouldn't be affected one way or another. Okay. This still use the same program approach.
Okay.
Well, Representative Herman.
Another question, maybe Betty, you could help. Like regarding Spinard Road, you know, did Anchorage get into the allocation process where they'd get so much a year for 5 years, or would they just get a lump sum, or?
Anchorage wouldn't get anything.
In the old program?
Anchorage is a first-class city.
Anchorage itself would get
itself.
Well, where are you going to put Spinard Road?
The municipality.
Well, that's Spinard Road. That's a poor
That's a poor example.
You know, use Kenai or Matsu, let's say Palmer, or you
Palmer
know,
or
something like that.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
It's not an Anchorage versus the rest of the state type deal, or Fairbanks or Nome. They're not involved one way or
another. No, it was the size that was, what I said, Spinard Road, it was the size of the project.
Okay. Okay, the municipality then, or the borough, or whatever. Would they get like an allocation each year and then fund a project, or would it be just like, you know, like the patchwork type?
Either way,
Mr. Chairman, I think the sort of banking a small amount and saving enough really only applied to the smaller communities where they couldn't get a significant massive money in one year's allocation to do something. I think for the Fairbanks borough, I think that every year had something to do with all of what they had in the program. We've got some examples of projects that were completed with it, which we could make available so you can see what kind of projects were done with the funds. And in the five-year plan, the last one that was done, you can see those communities which were basically saying, next year we're just going to be on hold to accumulate our share under the formula.
Let's see if I can put it in dollars we can understand. Let's say that the city of Cordova, in the formula, would have an allocation of $50. Okay, the project that they have in mind is going to cost $250. So they would get that $50 every year for 5 years and then build their project for $250. Is the way it would go.
What they most likely would do is they take $150 from another source, like the regular CIP, and they take $50 from their own pocket and $50 from LSR&T. That's what I call buttering it together and making one donut out of the whole thing. Or they would do, like you say, save something up. You know?
Yeah, you could do it either way.
Over the years, what I just have seen, the biggest difference now is that an LSR&T project in the borough is handled just like any other project. The full-scale deal, EIS and reconnaissance and design and the whole schmear, just like a project.
Yeah.
They pay in royalties for the gravel, and that's the biggest difference. And in defense of the boroughs is, they are not geared like a rural DOT headquarters like Nome to have the type of personnel to directly administer that type of a project. They don't have a big engineering section. They don't have the combined administrator engineer, field engineer type people there. So consequently, by necessity, they just about get into that type of a program approach. You know.
May I give another example?
Sure.
Let's say Cordova, we have White Shed Road. You've heard of that, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not a state road. Am I correct? There is a state road.
Point White Shed is a road.
What?
Point White Shed is our state.
Is that a state-maintained road? Okay, then that's...
Not a federal aid.
It's not a federal aid, but it's maintained by the state.
Yeah. Okay, it's maintained by the state. But let's say that the citizens of Cordova want to upgrade that. The state can't do it without going through all these steps, one, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the city of Cordova can take that $50 or $50,000, whichever way you want to call it, whatever that allocation is that year, and then they could go ahead and they can go to one of the contractors there and say, look, we've got this much money. This is what we need on the road. The people on the road are willing to donate this, this, and this. Therefore, then they get White Shed Road in the shape that they wanted, which actually is the intent of the LSR&T program.
It's a flexible program. You can use it in roads that don't get federal participation. You can. There's nothing preventing you, I think, to put it in as a supplement to a federally funded project. If you want to do that, I don't think anything prohibits you from that. You know, it's a state money. It can be used as a matching fund, but here again, that's not what it was envisioned for to do originally. I think we just about beat that milk cow around where it's going to be going dry. I'm amiable to either deal, whatever the wishes of the committee are. Let's put it that way. I entertain a motion to move it out with individual recommendations, and if that don't fly, we bottle it.
So moved.
Objection. Two objections noted. Representative Savacki, Representative Collins. Any other objections? Okay, then we move to Bilby's individual recommendations. There are 3, 4, 2 against.
We need to vote, I think.
You.
We need to vote to move it out. You're going to have to say all in favor.
We had two objections.
But we didn't have a vote.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay, yeah. Parliamentary, yeah, I have to ask then for an individual vote. So is in favor to move the bill with individual recommendations? Cato, Herman, Springer. Did we overlook anything else? We have the lawyers coming on us.
Okay.
We need to adjourn at 3:30, right, Representative?
I found my meeting isn't at 3:30 exactly. If it is, I'm late for it.
No, 4:30, I mean.
Yeah.
4:30 is the finance DOT subcommittee.
Yeah, there's no way I want to understand this.
Commissioner Hoffman, I understand that is not going to come on House Bill 419, is that right?
That's correct.
Is anybody else on the time restraint here?
There's a Senate Community and Regional Affairs hearing, but
which one do you want to testify on?
419.
Okay.
What's Commissioner
Hoffman? We take up 419 next.
Shave this beard.
I don't care. It's still about as we tried to find out our
I sit down with you sometimes.
I know, I'm going to solve this problem.
You know, see Doug every time I see it. Like using Doug last week.
Based on me.
Okay. We come back to order. We take up House Bill 419. An act establishing the Community Economic Disaster Revolving Loan Fund and providing for an effective date. That was introduced at the request of the governor. And we have representative from House from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs here. Would you identify yourself for the record and make your presentation, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jim Plasman. I'm a Deputy Director for the Municipal and Regional Assistance Division of the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. The loan fund bill that you see before you, House Bill 419, is one part of the rural recovery package proposed by Governor Cooper to address the serious economic problems faced by some of the smaller communities in Alaska. It's based on recommendations from a cabinet subcommittee on economic dislocation headed up by Lieutenant Governor Steve McAlpine. It includes essentially three parts. One part is the so-called FOSTER program, which stands for Financial Outreach Services to Enhance Recovery. And that has two parts. One part is new staff to assist communities with specifically financial problems. The other part is this loan program, which is to provide money for cash flow or debt problems. Second part of the rural recovery package is the READY program, or Rural Economic Development Initiative, which combines the old block grant and RDA programs and also provides for a new staff focus on community development problems and assistance. The final part of this package is Senate Bill 263, which is legislation dealing with grants, which would grant greater oversight authority through regulations and give specific legal authority on how the state would deal with past grant problems, including under certain conditions forgiveness of disallowed costs. We found support for this program through essentially through our experience in the field with an increasing demand for financial management training and technical assistance from our client communities. Additionally, surveys done on a formal basis by the department in the past have shown a need for financial management training. Additionally, the economic development or economic dislocation survey, a preliminary report was done by the department and indicated that there was great interest on the part of communities for assistance in dealing with these problems. Question that may arise is why should we try to approach this problem with a loan fund rather than grants? Again, this loan fund is part of a package. If we look at just the money aspect of it, it is not a great amount. And money will not by itself solve the problems. And additionally, training and technical assistance we have found is not going to be enough by itself. There are communities faced with severe cash flow problems that cannot be solved without an infusion of some capital. It allows a framework within which we can give focused, detailed technical assistance and training that will have an impact on the financial problems that are faced by these small communities. Additionally, it's the administration's position that loans are a way of getting communities to become more self-reliant and gain a sense of pride, and it's also a recognition of the state's financial condition. The legislation itself is pretty open-ended. we don't put specific terms in the legislation. We kind of see this as a vehicle for addressing the problem. As I said, this was initially visualized as part of this rural recovery package, and there had been some sense that we could perhaps develop this under the department's general authority to assist communities. But there's a desire to get legislative input and support for this program, and this we think it would strengthen the program to have this legislative vehicle for doing that. And we certainly are ready to make changes to respond to input from the legislature on this. However, the department does have some feelings on how these loans would be structured, and it would be the intent of the department to adopt regulations to do this. We're looking at a 5 to 10 year term of repayment, with the first 1 or 2 years with no repayments. And we'd be looking at low or no interest rate. As a condition of receiving a loan, we would require that these communities devise a financial management plan developed with the community in conjunction with the staff that we're additionally asking for under the foster program. We're targeting those communities which are essentially insolvent or on the verge of bankruptcy, and that I think is reflected in the definition of economic disaster in the bill. And it's anticipated that although the limit on the size of the loan is 50% of the revenue sharing and municipal assistance payments received in FY87, it's anticipated that the average size of the loan would not exceed $50,000, and I think that's reflected on in the subsection C, where we say if there is somebody that did not receive revenue sharing municipal assistance in 87, if for instance a new municipality incorporates or an unincorporated community entity that did not receive revenue sharing applies, the maximum amount would be $50,000. That's again a recognition that the most likely recipient of this type of aid would be a smaller community, and also a recognition of the limited amounts of funds that will be in that loan fund. Again, it's anticipated that these terms can be taken care of in regulation, but if the legislature has a strong preference, we're certainly willing to work with the legislature on this. Additionally, the amount that would be in that loan fund is $600,000, and that is included in the governor's proposed budget. So we would welcome your support and input on this program.
Thank you. Open it up for discussion. Any questions on Bill?
Boy, am I getting nitpicky. You guys stay up at night figuring out acronyms. Yeah. I mean, when I look at Foster, I think of foster homes. I don't think of any community and regional affairs. Can't you just use plain English?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cato, in fact, I noted that in one of the news stories reporting on the community and regional affairs budget, they noted a budget increment for foster care. Apparently, assuming. So, you know, that, again, it is maybe too cute an approach, and if in fact, there's a desire to change that acronym, we'd certainly be willing to work with you to find a more appropriate one.
I think, may I, Representative Brown?
Sure.
I think you'd find out as you came to my committee that I don't allow people to use acronyms in my committee, because every agency has its own jargon, and they use acronyms, other people don't understand them.
In my committee, it's all right, because I don't understand English too well anyway.
Oh, the heck, we don't.
Back here is what...
I'm sorry to get some hints.
What Foster stands for,
yeah.
Exhibit 6.
And,
and I'm just looking still what READY stands for.
That's
must be standing for our committee. We're always ready. Representative Collins?
I just wanted an explanation of the economic disaster means the occurrence or imminent threat of an event that adversely affects the financial condition of the municipality. et cetera. Give me an example of an imminent threat.
The IRS threatening to levy against their revenue sharing municipal assistance payments if they would have no funds available to pay for essential services in the community.
I think it's in one of the exhibits that question about the IRS's involvement is addressed. I see something here. Right here in Exhibit 4 from the Cabinet Subcommittee on Economic Dislocation to the Governor. Approximately 40 small communities are in danger of default manifested by unpaid Internal Revenue Service withholdings. I think there are other examples probably in the same situation, like if they're defaulting on any of their commitments with utilities, with equipment purchases, matching funds. I think there are a whole bunch of examples in that category. I think Representative Herman had, did you have a question?
Yeah, Jim, I was just going to ask, I know that, this talks about some of the problems that communities are having, but in looking at this issue, why do you think they're having these problems?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Herman, I think we've had a period of unprecedented wealth in this state, and a good portion of that wealth has been shared with the communities in rural Alaska. Now that the oil revenues are reduced, the ability of the state to continue that same level of support is likewise reduced. Some of the communities out there, because of maybe their lack of sophistication in financial management techniques and just the sheer volume of money that came their way, were not prepared to deal with all the money. And now in some of these grant programs, some of the IRS problems are coming to light now that the situation is one of lessened financial support from the state. Some communities got a lot of grants, and when they when one grant, for instance, was short, they'd take money from the next grant to finish off the first project, and that would kind of escalate until they got to the end, and now there's no more grant money and they're short money, and it turns out that they have to pay back money because they used sometimes these funds for purposes for which they were not directly intended. Sometimes the bookkeeper wasn't aware, or sometimes the bookkeepers changed so often that there wasn't the necessary continuity in the community to preserve that financial integrity of the community. So it's really a variety of reasons, but it seems to hit hardest on those smallest communities that have the least resources to respond to the problem.
Well, I want to interject at that point a little bit. I think either somebody in the third floor isn't aware what's going on out there, or they're purposefully sidestepping the issue. I think what you said is partially true, but I think only partially. If I've been informed right, the reasons that Economic Dislocation Committee in the Cabinet was created in the first place was an uproar that came from the fisheries in southeastern and the lower Yukon. That's where the cry for help came out. And I think if you analyze why some communities are in that type of a problem or in that type of a trouble, you find that one of the main reasons is that state government has failed to put its business and its budgets and everything on somewhat of a level course. The things is yo-yoing around like the stock market or the seismograph in Palmer. One year we are dumping money in at an unprecedented rate, and the state is more at fault, in my opinion, when I talk about state as the state government, than the municipal government, because in one time we dumped equipment in them, revenue sharing, municipal grants at an unprecedented rate, with no provisions for tomorrow, with no provisions for replacement, with no provisions for operating expenses, and we dumped revenue sharing in and all that type of stuff. That coupled with a good private climate, which enabled the people to go and make some money, and favorable fisheries regulations in specific cases that induced them to make investments like in boats and so on. That was a direct result of extremely favorable and subsidized state loan programs. And then all of a sudden we pulled the plug on them. Governor came in last year with a ridiculous budget in anything that had anything to do with municipalities. They pulled the plug out of them. They didn't refurbish loan programs. The damn fisheries program is out of whack. Nobody has the guts to address some high seas fisheries problems, some internal fisheries problems like false bass and so on, fish runs in the Yukon. And I always said it, the guy who gets the rear tit, he gets nothing. And the guys on the rear tit are those people out in those communities that are crying for help right now. So let's not blame them people on it. They didn't do anything that wasn't prudent. They didn't do anything that went out on a limb. There was a lot of reward and a lot of incentive for them to do exactly what they do. And I think anybody sitting on that table here would do under the circumstances the same thing. I give you your chance. And, you know, I get pissed off, just frankly, when I see an administration or whoever sidesteps the issue, because that bill here is supposed to be something meaningful that is going to help specific situations. And we can't come up with a solution if we don't openly discuss what the problem is, regardless of who ultimately gets blamed for it or something, you know. But we are not going to come up with a meaningful solution if we don't face where the problem is. And in my opinion right now, the problem is a complete instability in the policy of the state, where we're going and what we're willing to fund and what we're not going to willing to fund, and what the situation is right now and what municipalities and small communities can expect in 1989 and 90 and 91 and 92. I think that's what we have to do. And the patchwork with $600,000, we can piss that away just as fast as we pissed $1 billion away. That's nothing but a small patch on a leaking air mattress. So I have my say, now you can have yours.
Good. Mr. Chairman, I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, if it sounded like I was putting blame on the communities, that wasn't my intent. And in fact, if we look, for instance, at Senate Bill 263 dealing with grants administration, I think that's an open recognition of the very thing that you're talking about, that the problem is the fact of this money all going out without, as you say, you know, the follow-through and that's needed to help those communities. I think the approach that the administration is taking at this point is to try and be more responsible, and saying that those high levels of revenues that we had in the past simply aren't available to us now, and we have to help people adjust to what is going to be a lower level of revenue all across the state, not just rural Alaska, but everyone. And it's the attempt to find that balance, that sustained budget, that of course is the great challenge. But what we're looking at here is trying to help communities do that at the local level, and that's the desire for these people in the foster programs to go out and help those communities do that. We're going to hear another bill today that's going to talk about, you know, the levels of assistance to rural Alaska. I think that's good, but just the financial thing is not by itself, you know, the only thing that people are going to need. They're going to need some help to do the job and find what that level of sustainable budgeting is. And I couldn't agree with you more that, you know, the fluctuations and stuff need to be evened out. And one of the intents of this program through the ready portion is to help communities where there is some kind of economic development base to have to help them develop that and give them the assistance that's necessary, both technical assistance and financial assistance at the community level, which is something in the past I think that the state has not done on a very comprehensive basis. So that, again, I certainly would not take issue with your comments, and I agree with them, but I think that it's the intent of this program is in sync with your thinking.
I know Representative Herman had her hand up. Just one follow-up question. I honestly fail to see how another $600 million loan program is going to help. And I try to be very open-minded about it. I give you an example, and maybe you can understand why I asked that question. that takes the community of Kotlik, and I can take a lot of other communities. I just take it as an example, okay? Kotlik has no income whatsoever other than subsistence, a way of making a living except fisheries, and that is salmon fisheries. And from salmon fisheries, primarily a couple species, kings and chums or kings and silvers, depending which way they're running. They have, because of various reasons, two very poor seasons. One of them was simply the closure and opening pattern, which is man-made. And half of that man-made deal is political. So far, nothing, no fault of their own. They have a few years ago, when they had more generous quarters, and when the fisheries loan programs were implemented, they, like everybody else, they got themselves some suitable boats and gears and motor and all that type of stuff on an installment type basis. And the projection was they were going to pay all that off, like most of the fisheries investments, through proceeds in the harvest of fish. Well, they haven't been able to meet their payment demands. They had very poor fisheries results for two seasons, and not because they were lazy or drunk or anything. They just the time they had the short openings, like 12 or 24 hours, the river was muddy, they couldn't get them. And then when they finally caught a good run, everybody had it opened up, fishing game reacted that way, then they let everybody fish, and then the fish buyers and processors couldn't handle it, and they had to dump their fish overboard because nobody would buy them at that time. So they were prudent, they worked their butt off, it's not anything of their own. How is that type of a program going to help those people? And you know, that's it's a typical example, it's not a made-up example.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think that this, if we look at the rural recovery package as a whole, I think there is assistance for people. There's funding available through the READY program, for instance, to help those people, for instance, form a cooperative, which maybe would help them sell those fish. Maybe there's a need to find, I mean, we're talking about a resource that was there, right? I mean, they were dumping fish. There's got to be a way to sell those.
For one day that happened, exactly.
Okay, all that, and my point is that there's funds available in the program, in the package, to help people deal with that type of problem, to deal with if it's a marketing problem or if it's a getting an organization together to buy those fish and find a market for those. And that's part of the economic development focus in Kotlik on the local level, where, you know, we haven't had that type of effort and assistance in the past. This loan program is designed more to assist the city of Kotlik. And the city of Kotlik is going to be running out of money if the people aren't able to pay their utility bills. And it could well be facing closing those down because of those economic situations. And if it's, as you say, you know, two bad years, and then maybe we can expect that to turn around after a couple of years, then that's, I think, the answer to your question of why a loan program can work there. It can help the city over those harder times. And when the fish come back or the openings come back or they're able to get the markets, get to the markets that they need, and they're able to, the individuals there are able to get the money that they need to pay back for the utilities, then the city will be able to pay that money back.
Well, I like to borrow that pink glass you guys are looking through, because I like to be optimistic. I can tell you right now where you need to expand that bill, and that is if you give the city of Kotlik a loan like that, you can build right in a mechanism how you're going to forgive it, because you're not going to see a blue nickel out of that, because Kotlik is sucking swamp water right now. They are so broke right now they ain't paying AVAC and they can't do anything. I think that sucks. $600,000 is going to get sucked up like a bunch of mosquitoes in a flock of swallows. It's going to go so fast you're going to see it. But I did enough talking. I think Representative Herman.
Okay. You did a lot of good talking.
Yeah,
I just want to preface my statements by saying, you know, I'm constantly harping on community regional affairs, and I'm harping on them because, you know, they're saying, okay, we're going to be a savior to rural Alaska. This is what we're going to do to help them. And I'm harping on community regional affairs because I want, if they're going to say that, then I want it to happen. And I think that community regional affairs is probably one of the best departments that help the rural areas. And, you know, I have concerns about this loan program here. You know, we should take a look back at, okay, how much how much cut in municipal assistance and revenue sharing has gone on. You know, if you go, what is it? I know it's full funding this year of what it was last year, but then if you look back 2 years back, isn't it like more like 40% that's been cut?
Last year?
I mean, you have to start taking those kind of things into consideration. And, you know, I think what one of the things the committee tried to do last year was, okay, give us an overall picture of what all the effects of cutting state government in all the different departments have on some of these small communities. You know, you just, it's not just in city government, but it's in all the programs that are in rural Alaska. You know, there's very, very few state funded programs, like, you know, health aids I would consider not a state funded program, but you have to go on and on down the line like that. And I don't think that that we have it. You know, and let me just say that, you know, I'm willing to work with administration, but, you know, if we have to go to an AFN meeting and learn what the governor's office is doing in Rosita World, you know, if we learn that there, what kind of coordination is that? You know, I mean, you know, there can be, I think, a lot done, and I'm not sure if this is it. And, you know, I'm going to keep harping on the like amount of service. If we want like hands-on economic development out in my district, you know, who's going to do it? Who's going to travel to 40 communities? Who's going to say, okay, here, let me show you what you can do to foster your economic development and things like that? And that's,
I think, Jim, you got handed a note. Your face went into the promotions there. You got to go someplace else.
Mr. Chairman, my presence has been requested at the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee, where I have a couple of things up there today.
Well, no problem. I would say that much. Why don't you go ahead and go over there? We discuss it in committee. If we think we have a lot more questions, we hold the bill over. And if we think we got the answers, then we act on it. Fair enough.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman, Carol, the legislative liaison alternate here is from our department, and Bill Rolfson is also here from our department to talk to revenue sharing if there's any specific questions on that. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
We'll be nice to them.
Well, Commissioner, he's awful busy.
He'd have to be.
Okay, Representative Savacki.
Yeah, not to maybe belabor what we talked. You know, again, I think what everybody's saying, it would be nice to know that if these funds are actually allocated out there, they're going to do some good, whether it's through the loan, the forgiveness of the loan for 2 years, or the foster program, which is going to go for education, or the ready program, which is job training. The biggest problem that I have, and we talked about this at one of the previous meetings, if you take a look at the cabinet subcommittee from October 15th, in regards to the manning for this.
Oh, yeah.
Now, it's with Fiscal 88, which says they're going to need about $258,000 to send all these experts out there to save all these communities. Well, in Fiscal 89, they have a $920,000 proposed budget. And if you want to use some extremes, they're talking about approximately 40 villages that have a problem. And if you maximize $50,000 loan, we're going to be spending in fiscal 89 over $900,000 to provide $2 million worth of loans out there for those villages. That's asinine, totally asinine. I mean, we have an estate right now, either within the departments or contractor auditors, that can do the specific job we're trying to create right now with more bureaucracy. And one of the other questions we asked, that, and I forget how far back it was, how long are these new positions going to be there? And nobody could answer whether it was going to be a year or 2 years, or in my attitude, they're going to be there forever, because once you establish bureaucracy, you're never going to get rid of them. And all I see is we're establishing more bureaucracy, more jobs, to pacify increase, and we're really not going to be able to take care of those communities out there. Or I think we've got enough implemented right now that we can go in there and help those people and bring those finances around. But not for $1 million a year.
Well,
supplement $2 million program maximum.
Representative Savacki, in defense of the bill, the fiscal note shows one grade 12 technician to administer the deal. Those notes are from the economic disaster funds, and those are the people that are much higher up in the clouds than those that put that deal.
I'm just saying, I have no problem with the bill.
It's fiscal note shows one accounting technician grade 12 to administer the $600,000 basically, but I have a couple hang-ups with that too. As I pointed out in that last bill which we considered, where they had six new positions under the jobs bill, and I think it's the wrong type of a person. They don't need a grade 12 accounting clerk, because all that clerk is going to do is really keep track of the figures and the stuff. I think in the implementation process, working with the villages, they need a different person, and maybe that's not reflected in the fiscal note, because maybe such persons are already staffed, you know, and available from the from other positions. But that's speculation, not according to this. Yeah. Carl, do you want to shed any light on that? Would you join us?
Certainly.
And we don't want to put you on the hot seat. I know you're just filling in here.
Yeah, I'm just filling in.
Would you just identify yourself with the
record? Yes, my name is Carol Carroll. I'm the Deputy Director of Admin Services at the Community and Regional Affairs. And I didn't quite understand what you meant. I know that the accounting position would do the nuts and bolts accounting, as you said, for those loans going out and coming in, do it on access, and keep count of each individual loan. Those other positions that we're talking about are as an increment to our operating budget in the component called training and development, and will be placed out in regional offices. So they are in two different places. What you see, this is just for that loan fund. Yes.
Well, that's what I've been saying. What I don't see identified are the loan examiners, the people that make the judgment call. What do you think happens when you throw $600,000 here on the market? You're going to have 2,000 applications with everybody screaming banshee and all they needed. That accounting clerk 12A, he ain't going to do anything unless he throws them in the dumpster. You know,
That's exactly right.
There's going to be a whole bunch of other people involved in the evaluation process, in the coordination process, in the implementation process, which are not identified in that fiscal note, you know, so...
That's exactly right. They're those foster people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's what we suspected. So they are already either on board or identified in another request.
Exactly.
Yeah. Representative Cato.
Yeah, in this handout on what is foster, that's what I mean, when you have to make an acronym and then figure out what it is. Over on page 4, how much funds are being requested? For fiscal year 1989, the governor's requested $1,251,000. $600,000 for the loan,
yes.
And $651 for the technical assistance program.
Thousand.
Yeah, $651,000 for the technical assistance program. Well, what are you going to do? Assist them on how to apply for the loan?
No.
Being facetious.
Now, I can understand what your concerns are there. And the thing is that you pay for these high-class people to go out and do pre-bankruptcy work in communities. I mean, that means, like, I've been involved with an organization doing that for the last 6 months, and it's very time-consuming. But you're right. I mean, when you look at it on the surface, you're talking about personnel being more than half of what we're requesting. What we envision that loan fund to do is to pay for only those things that are absolutely necessary, that we can't get a workout situation with other, like utilities. If we can't get a workout situation for those things, we're going to have to pay them. And the IRS is the big one that we get to think of. But I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, Representative Collins.
Well, it would seem to me that it doesn't make sense, and it might be better just to give them the money. And, you know, I think they would get more bang for the buck if you just gave them the money and said, hey, you know, here's a couple $1 million, pay your bills, and don't get into this jam again. And then secondly, I guess I have a real concern, because how are these loans ever going to be paid back?
That's right.
I mean, this kind of thing really bothers me, so I'll be real quiet on it.
I might give you one answer about payback.
Paybacks are hell.
Yeah, exactly. But there has been some consideration about taking their payback out of their revenue sharing and municipal assistance on a little bit year by year.
So then you're not
you can always at all. Just increase revenue.
Yeah. Representative Furman.
Were you on in Community Regional Affairs when the Lieutenant Governor had his meeting on economic dislocation at the AFN convention in Anchorage?
I came over to Community Regional Affairs at the very beginning of November, and I was not involved in that, I'm sorry.
I was just wondering if you had any background of what the communities were telling the Lieutenant Governor at that time.
No, I do not. But I'm learning quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what they were saying, some of the suggestions they had for solving the problem that they're in. You know, I mean, there must be some background in it, right?
Well, I know that our department did a survey of communities on what kind of help that they needed. A lot of people have been asking for accounting-type work. How do we get, if we don't get any more money, which would be the easiest way to do it, is to increase, like, the increase from 25 to 50,000 and not going to communities. That would be the easiest way to do, to get some of them out of the problems that they're having. But they've also requested that there's time and time again that we have a lot of turnover in staff and we lose the continuity and the accounting type things and how you set up your books and how you do revenue forecasts and all of those things. How do you do a facility cost out? How do you know how much it's going to take to maintain your facilities? So we have been, as a department, there are people that request that type of assistance from us. And because those people in the field offices are local government specialists and they don't have that kind of training, we haven't been able to give it, is my understanding. And we do have some internal audit staff in our department who have been trying to provide some of that. And we have one person in the Cotsview area that does have an accounting background that is providing that kind of technical assistance, they call it, although I don't like that word. But in other places, we don't have that. Personnel we have don't have the training to do that.
I think you guys are hanging too much hope on accounting. I know the six new positions that are requested are accounting positions too. There's a difference between accounting and accountability. What we need to look at is accountability. You can have the nicest bookkeeping where all your figures are identified. If they get pissed away, it's nice to know how they got pissed away, but it doesn't do you any good.
Still pissed away, right?
That's right. But the accountability, and that is an ongoing process. That's what I said the last time when we discussed the FOSTER program. I think it does not suffice to have a nice billing system and a nice accounting system and stuff like that, so you know later on, well, the money didn't really do anything for the community in the state. I think what's a lot more important is to identify during the process what's happening with the money and what they're doing, and there you got the wrong type of person hired. You don't need an accounting clerk for that type of thing. You need somebody with a little moxie and knows what's going on out in the villages and who raises the flare and says, hey, those people are not doing anything they're supposed to do with that money and we're not going to pay them anything more. Not wait till $1 million is gone and say, boy, that was another disaster. And that's what I don't see happening with that type of approach.
Well, I think everybody at this table agrees that there's a problem. It's how to go out and try and solve one of those problems is the question.
Well,
and that's what we're, you know, we had a suggestion.
Sure, it's a suggestion. and you know, it's a good one, but I agree with Representative Collins and Cater right now. If it takes us a dollar to carry a dollar out there, we're going to do better by utilizing the mail service and just mail it out there. That saves us a buck, right? And because the end result is just about going to be the same thing. And I think the issue is really clear. I don't want to sound cynical, but it looks to me like another patch on the air mattress. It's a short-term deal. It doesn't solve anything long-term. I have even, from a political standpoint, a real big problem. When we open that valve here, this is a $600,000 fund, you're going to have two smiling people and eight people shooting holes at you because there isn't enough to go around everywhere, and you're going to get in the evaluation process who is going to be the most needy, and that's going to be a real nightmare for the governor and for the legislators. You know, it's, It's not a simplistic deal because the way it's laid out right now, I can name you right now about 40 or more communities that are going to be Johnny on the spot just like that, and it doesn't make any difference at that point if it is a loan or not, because if you are in a pond full of alligators, you sign any damn thing. If somebody thinks there's a balloon coming, you can latch onto it and take you out of there. They're going to promise anything right now. And so let's worry about it. And with a little luck, there's going to be a different mayor and a different city council that's going to get stuck with the garbage when the sheriff comes in. You know, so. Any more questions or discussion on the bill? Any more questions to Carol? I'm not really sure what to do with that bill because in a way, it's not a singular bill. It's another one of those things that is a mosaic in a total picture, and it ties in with the Ready program. It ties in with the Foster program. It even ties in with our next bill with 439 a little bit. And
you divide 40,000.
I don't know if it is timely to let that bill out of committee or not.
Representative, Mr. Chairman, Collins. I would object very strongly to letting the bill out of committee.
I think
that the message that we have to send to the department is go back to the drawing board. That's the message we should send. But I feel very uncomfortable passing pieces of legislation out of committee that are going to create problems more than solve them. And I would very strongly object to putting this bill forward, whether or not it involves other bills as well. But I think that maybe that's the message we need to send back.
Yeah, I agree. To me, it's just not a singular bill that ties in with a whole bunch of other stuff. Representative Furman.
I just know we need to do something about this problem, but I don't know if this is the vehicle.
I'd rather just give them the money.
Yeah.
Okay. I really would.
Well,
and I expect them to pay it back, because they can't.
Again, not to belabor it, but I'm not good in math, but I just figured out 40 communities asking for loans, if they were all equal, would be $15,000 a community.
Right, yeah, we said, yeah.
So I went to extreme, give them $450,000, you have $2 million, and you're probably spending $2 million to implement
the program.
Well, the next bill is a lot cheaper. from the standpoint of what getting bang for the buck again. Representative Cato, it's 4:30. I don't want to get rid of you, but if you have to leave,
I want to get rid of me.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I think you got a more important committee there.
Yeah.